Tony Kushner, whose Angels in America has been critically reviewed as one of the most influential American plays of the last two decades, will be the featured speaker at Temple Emmanuel in Kingston on Sunday, November 18th. Kushner won a Pulitzer Prize and a Tony Award for his play Angels in America, which was later made into an award-winning television miniseries. He has just penned the film Lincoln for Steven Spielberg, as well as the screenplay for Munich and the children's book Brundabar, illustrated by his friend the late Maurice Sendak. The winner of the Pulitzer Prize, two Tonys, an Emmy, three Obies, and an Oscar nomination will see Lincoln open on Friday, the 16th of November, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Tony Kushner to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much for being with us, and it will be good to have you in the region. You've been working on this Lincoln project for a long time.
About 6 years. I think I started in 2006, and we finished filming about a year ago in December. So it has been a very long journey.
What is it about that project that was so challenging for you? You have talked about how this changed you, and obviously working with the words of Lincoln, of what that has been like over these last 6 years.
Well, you know, I mean, it was a very difficult thing in a certain way because the material, the actual historical material, is so overwhelmingly rich that condensing the story into a comprehensible 2.5-hour screenplay was just an enormous puzzle. And it took a very long time to get to the point where I actually had focused on which of the countless stories one could tell we wanted to tell. We knew from the beginning we didn't want to try and get the entire 4 years of the Lincoln administration or his whole life or the whole Civil War into a 2.5-hour movie. That would be, an impossibility and produce a kind of film that nobody would want to watch. So we looked for a particular moment in the Lincoln administration that seemed to us a reasonable stand-in for the entirety of the Lincoln's presidency, or at least as close as we could get. And I found one, I think, and we really focused, very narrowly, but I think as a result of the narrow focus, there's a real sense of intimacy and depth in the film, or at least that's how it feels to me. So I'm really happy about the way that we went. As I think it's probably the case for anybody who spends a lot of time reading Lincoln and reading about Lincoln and reading the sort of extraordinary people who write about Lincoln, it was a life and soul-changing experience. It's some of the deepest and profoundest and most beautiful and most moving history and sort of contemplation about the inner workings of democracy and the philosophical implications of democracy and of a people's government that I've ever encountered. And I really feel like I'm really happy that the film seems to have turned out well and the people are really liking it. I feel that even if it hadn't turned out well, it would have been a great blessing to spend this time in the company of Lincoln, because he really is one of the great people ever, and certainly arguably the greatest leader of a democracy ever, I would argue that, and a great writer, and apparently a very great human being. So it was a joy to work on it as hard as it was.
And you talk about that joy and his greatness, but also, as hard as it was, it would seem one of the things that would be the challenge is to not go down the road of hero worship, to have a film about the realities and the specifics of Lincoln and his political process.
Right. I mean, you know, and we show the film is about the work that Lincoln was doing during the lame duck session of Congress in January of 1865 to pass the 13th Amendment, some of the work that he did to make sure that the 13th Amendment, which is the amendment that abolishes slavery, some of the work that Lincoln was doing was not illegal, but in a gray area in terms of the executive branch working hard to have an influence on the legislative branch and so on. And, you know, I think it shows a kind of a gritty and sometimes distasteful side to politics and political maneuvering that people, I think, are apprehensive about, that people are, that causes people to distrust politics. I don't think it should. I mean, I think that the business of negotiating a path forward among the representatives of an exceedingly heterogeneous population is always going to be tricky and require a certain amount of scheming and plotting and planning to work. And I think that we haven't shied away from that at all. I mean, the term you use is an interesting, it's exactly the issue, is whether or not making a film that is fundamentally deeply admiring of someone is hero worship. And in talking to a lot of journalists, which is all I've been doing for the last couple of weeks as we get ready to open, there's a wide variety of reaction. And and I knew that this would happen. There's a kind of expectation now that if we're going to look at a great figure from history, at a significant figure in history, our job is sort of to debunk the myths surrounding that, especially if it's somebody who is revered, like Lincoln, that what we should really be doing is showing that he wasn't all that great, or that he, you know, really didn't want to end slavery, or that he was a sort of a dictator who suspended habeas corpus and so on. And so there's a great need to, you know, sort of look at the history of Lincoln, it seems to me, with a jaundiced eye. But, you know, I've read a huge amount about Lincoln now over the last 6 years, and the legitimate history about Lincoln is, you know, fairly unanimous in its admiration for his skills. As for instance, I would imagine if you gather together, you know, a huge body of literature about Michelangelo or Mozart or Albert Einstein or Darwin, you would also encounter, you know, primarily from serious musicologists or scientists, or, you know, whatever the field would be, art historians, you see a consensus that amounted to great admiration. Some people actually are great. And I think Abraham Lincoln, without any question, was a great human being, obviously a great writer, and a great political strategist. And so there are a couple of debunkers here or there who've gotten a lot of attention, but for the most part, if we were going to tell the truth, which is really our job, we had to make a movie that expressed tremendous admiration for this astonishing figure. And we didn't want to, you know, just default to cynicism, which I think, you know, is profoundly disabling if all you're able to do in looking at history is to see records of, you know, chicanery and disappointment and failure. You know, why get out of bed in the morning? And also, you're not reading correctly, because history is really full of instances of great nobility and courage and sacrifice and genius and progress. Abraham Lincoln's success in transforming, and I think it's a success that he deserves an enormous degree of credit for, in transforming this ghastly war, the meaning of this ghastly war from just, you know, empty slaughter into, as he put it, a new birth of freedom for this country, and the end of human slavery as a legal institution in what was at that time the world's only really successful democracy. I think you know, it's an astonishing accomplishment almost without parallel in human history, and it deserves to be treated that way, as opposed to, you know, being cynical for the sake of being cynical.
Right.
You can probably tell that you've just touched a sore spot.
Well, no, I think it's a fascinating one, because I came away, I mean, I and it follows up in the next question I have, which is much of what Doris Kearns Goodwin did in Team of Rivals,
right.
And I had the same conversation with her about this, which, and this is, the movie is based on that book, you're the screenwriter. In looking at that story, how much did you rely on that source material?
Well, you mean on Doris's book
specifically? Yes.
I mean, the credit, I think, is going to read inspired by Doris Kearns Goodwin's Team of Rivals. And Doris was enormously important to this film. I mean, I consulted with her. We talked constantly all the way through the 6 years of writing it, and she came on the set for a visit, and I was in touch with her throughout that and throughout the post-production as well. You know, I think that inspired is I think that's the way that credit is going to read, is really the right term, because Steven Spielberg had purchased the rights to Team of Rivals before he hired me as a screenwriter. And I think that, you know, you can read, by my count, about 5 or 6 really great Lincoln biographies. And every single one of them gives you a slightly different Lincoln. Again, all of them essentially, you know, admiring. But people read Lincoln differently. And Doris's version of Lincoln, which is both very, very politically inflected and also enormously... I mean, she makes, I think, a great case for admiring this guy. I mean, there's a great affection for him. I think that Team of Rivals provided Stephen and I with a shared sort of meeting place where to start to talk about Lincoln. We both responded to the book the same way, the way that many, many, many people have, which is it's a Lincoln that is convincing and a Lincoln that Stephen and I both felt resembled the Lincoln we wanted to make a movie about. The actual story that the movie deals with is about 1.5 pages of Doris's book, which I think is 700-something pages long. Right. So, you know, I mean, Team of Rivals is really a 4-way political biography and sort of a living definition of a book that can't be turned into a feature-length screenplay. And I had a hard enough time just making this one episode fit. My first draft was 500 pages long. That actually covered the last four months of his life. But by the time we arrived at filming, Stephen had made the decision that he really wanted to focus on just the first month, on January, which I think was a brave and exciting decision. And I did a lot of supplementary research, but I've never seen anything to indicate that Doris's book isn't a completely reliable source of information. And as I say, I think the Kearns Goodwinian spirit infuses the spirit of the film.
When you think about the work that you did with Steven Spielberg on this, and the fact that you both worked so long and were both so admiring of the man, how soon did you know that you two would work together well and were on the same page?
Well, we'd already made a film together, and I think, I mean, that's why Stephen asked me to take a crack at writing Lincoln. We'd made the film Munich together and had a really wonderful time working together on Munich. I was there on set the entire time, and we worked on the script the whole time we were filming. And it was my first feature-length film. I'd made Angels in America with Mike Nichols, but that was very closely based on the play. And this was the first time I'd actually worked on a screenplay for a feature-length film. I really loved working with Stephen, and I think he enjoys working with me. So we kind of knew going into Lincoln, we already had a pattern of collaboration established, and that was very helpful. I certainly tested Stephen's patience a great deal, because it was over 1.5 years before I even began to produce an attempt, and everything that I sent him for the first 1.5 years was, I was trying to start in September of 1863, and it became clear that there was no way to start midway through the administration and get all the way to the end. I was writing hundreds of pages and not getting anywhere. And we both began to get really worried about how doable this was. And then I had the idea of switching to the 4-month model and finish this enormously long draft. But I knew from Munich that I could also send Stephen this preposterously long thing. It looked like a Manhattan phone book. and that he wasn't going to freak out and fire me, that he sat down and started reading, and that we, through conversation, arrived at the, you know, and when Daniel Day-Lewis came on board, he joined right in the conversation, and it turned into a great, up until the time we started filming, a really lively 3-way exchange about Lincoln and about the script.
The movie comes out on Friday, the 16th of November. You are going to be at Temple Emmanuel on the 18th of November on Sunday. What do you plan on talking about?
It's an onstage interview, so I'll talk about all sorts of things, whatever people want to talk about. I mean, I imagine we'll talk about Lincoln and the election and President Obama's victory. And since it's at Temple Emmanuel, I would hope we'll also talk about Jewish issues of all sorts and you know, theater maybe even. Who knows?
What is your next project? Now that this is over and you've been spending so much time with it, do you want to do more theater?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm a playwright, and I'm working on a new script for Stephen and a screenplay for the producer Scott Rudin about Eugene O'Neill also. I'm sure that I will go to my grave thinking of myself as a playwright primarily. It's not that I feel that theater is a superior form to any other form or anything like that. It's just a place where I feel that what I'm able to do is put to its best use, and I still feel immensely drawn to the challenges and the questions that the form of live theater presents. So I'm slowly beginning to work on a new play, and my last play is going to be produced in London now and in a couple of cities in the United States, and I'm working on that. So I'm quite busy.
I can't even imagine the terrifying nature of writing dialogue for the man who did indeed write the second inaugural address.
Yeah, it was hard. You know, that was one of the reasons that it took me a long time to even say yes to Stephen about doing it. But it's a, you know, for some reason, I read, you know, my way through the Library of America 2-volume collected writings of Abraham Lincoln, which is a really great, I mean, the full complete works of Lincoln takes up 7 volumes, but the Library of America publishes a wonderful 2-volume set. And a lot of the eyewitness accounts that were gathered by Lincoln's old friend Herndon and various other people gathered, sort of describing what his conversation was like. And I'm fairly well read in 19th century literature. So, you know, and we shared certain loves, Shakespeare and Robert Burns and the King James Bible. So felt like it wasn't an impossibility. And I began to feel a real confidence about doing it. And people seem to be unsure about the lines that Daniel's saying, which ones are mine and which ones are his. So it's an amalgam of both. And so that's a nice thing. I feel like it went from being something that was completely terrifying to something doable. And I enjoyed it. I'm not completely convinced that I'm done. I know that the movie's opening and that it's finished and that there's nothing else to do, but it's hard to let go of it. I know I'll certainly keep reading about him for the rest of my life. You don't want to let go.
It's funny because I had that same conversation with Doris Kearns Goodwin of how hard it was to let him go.
Yeah, I've noticed this in, you know, Carl Sandburg felt this way, Marston Hartley felt this way. You read, you know, poets like Stanley Kunitz, you know, I mean, there's a, you know, God knows Walt Whitman couldn't ever let go.
Okay.
And there's a real love that you start to feel for this man. Been, you know, dead for over 150 years, but you feel this sort of, there's a sense of intimacy that's kind of remarkable. I mean, because he revealed a certain amount of himself, a certain kind of intimacy in his writings and in his actions that is kind of shocking when you encounter it and makes you feel as if you're actually in his presence. And at the same time, you know, he really was an enormously mysterious and private and lonely figure, I think. And that also deepens the sense of connection to him in a way, because there's always something to figure out. If he was completely available, if anybody's completely available, they sort of become boring. And Lincoln will never be boring, because there's a mystery to him. And also, when you start to engage with him, you're engaging with 150 years of America, and in a sense the world, thinking about him and writing about him and struggling with him. And so you engage not just with Lincoln, but with all the issues that revolve around Lincoln, which in a certain sense seem to be all the issues of any significance to human beings. He seems like a very central figure.
Tony Kushner is the third in a series of preeminent speakers, writers, artists, politicians, and entertainers at Temple Emmanuel in Kingston. The program begins at 7 o'clock on Sunday, November 18th. Sunday, November 18th, you can find out more information by going to speakers.te for Temple Emmanuel, speakers.te.org. Again, Lincoln opens on Friday, the 16th of November. Tony Kushner, a great pleasure to have you with us. Thank you very much for spending time, and best of luck with all the projects in the works and your trip to the Hudson Valley. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. It was a pleasure.
Again, Tony Kushner is going to be at Temple Emmanuel in Kingston on November 18th at 7 o'clock, speakers.te.org. Lincoln opens on Friday. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.